This is Dr. Susan Kolb with Temple of Health Radio Show, and today we're very pleased to have Dr. Stephen Greer, the author of Hidden Truth, Forbidden Knowledge, and also the founder of the Center for the Study of Extraterrestrial Intelligence, which was founded in 1990, and some of its projects include the CE5 Initiative and the Disclosure Project. Now, the book Hidden Truth, Forbidden Knowledge was published back in 96, so I'm sure there's a lot more that's happened since this book. But this book is really revolutionary. This book is really bringing in information that has not been brought in before, and something I think the whole world needs to know. Welcome, Dr. Greer. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thank you. And by the way, the book, I think, came out in 2006. We didn't have any books out in 1996 yet.
Oh, I'm sorry. I must have misread something on it then.
That's all right. That's perfectly fine.
Well, 06 is still, 5 years ago, so things have happened since then.
A lot, yeah. And there's a new book that's just come out last year called Contact, Countdown, the Transformation. And all of these are at disclosureproject.org, which is our primary website.
Great. Well, you have a fascinating story, some of which you've shared in Hidden Truth, Forbidden Knowledge. Would you like to start telling our audience a little bit about how some of your earlier experiences prepared you for this job you have now?
Well, I wouldn't say it's a job. I'm an emergency physician and used to be chairman of emergency medicine at a hospital in North Carolina. And my uncle designed the lunar module, which was the machine that put the first man on the moon. Those of you who may not have been around back in 69 when that happened. But I found out about a lot of classified things when I was very young, and actually saw what the public would call a UFO when I was about 8 or 9 years old. So I've had a lifelong interest in this subject, and it sort of blossomed further after I had a near-death experience when I was 17, and the Hidden Truth, Forbidden Knowledge, which is now in, I think, 8 or 9 languages around the world, is really my account of my journey through consciousness and the healing that took place, and then my exploration across time and space with other civilizations from other planets that are visiting this planet. And when I had the near-death experience, I was raised a very devout atheist, and we didn't believe anything existed that couldn't be put in a test tube. But and actually, we were raised a Unitarian, sort of just a progressive humanist tradition. But when I had this experience, I had an experience of cosmic consciousness and unity consciousness. It was beautiful. And this caused me to begin to explore meditation and the science of consciousness. The near-death experience was brought on by a very serious illness, which I spontaneously was healed from this higher consciousness experience that ensued from this very serious condition I was in. And I was only 17, so I had no foundation for really understanding these things. So I began to really explore, and I became not only a practitioner of Sanskrit, Vedic meditation, but then became a teacher of meditation before I was a medical doctor. So my misspent youth was spent spending, 8 hours a day in meditation and reading Sanskrit and the Vedas while most people were running around chasing skirts. But I did all this. I did all this prior to the time I went into medical school. And after I had this near-death experience, I had an amazing contact experience with a very advanced extraterrestrial civilization. And together, in a sense, we created a series of protocols for making contact between humans and these other civilizations. And that's what the Center for the Study of Extraterrestrial Intelligence started out doing. And in 1990, I founded that organization. I was living in Asheville, North Carolina. It's not that far from where you are. And it resulted in the impetus for it was to create a sort of citizens diplomatic corps, not unlike the Physicians for Social Responsibility that sort of broke the ice during the Cold War and went to the Soviet Union to try to open up a dialogue. And this whole initiative was based on understanding trans-dimensional physics that not only has implications for healing and health, but for interstellar communication and travel. And the root of that understanding is really in the whole new physics that deals with science, consciousness, and non-local awareness, which I'm sure all of your listeners are familiar with, or I suspect most of them are, if they have followed your work and that of Larry Dossey and people like that. So, but what really became of this is that after about a year or two of just going around and getting people together to go out under the stars and use these protocols we've developed, we began to have extraordinary contact. I mean, back in 92, for example, we had about 100-foot diameter extraterrestrial disk hover, almost land in a field with us in England when we were in Florida back in 1992, I think it was March, and we have a video of this amazing thing where there were four extraterrestrial vehicles that come in and are signaling to us. And then we went to Mexico near the giant Popocatépetl volcano there outside Mexico City, and we were on the back side of it in a very remote area, and one of these massive triangular objects, it was the size of three football fields on each side, emerged from that area and came over and hovered around us, signaling to us while we were using consciousness to remote view and see the occupants of this massive spacecraft. And so all of this began to happen. We have amazing photographs and images of this. And the result of it began to speak to us, well, what do we do now that this is happening? And we decided we needed to somehow educate the public that we're not alone, and also our policymakers. And so we started something to disclose this information to the public. It started out as something called Project Starlight, and that was sort of a project that I was doing with a man who was very good friends with President Clinton's CIA director named R. James Woolsey. And Jim Woolsey was Clinton's first CIA director. And I got I'll never forget getting a FedEx from this guy saying, look, you're going to be the first person to brief the CIA director and the president on this subject, and they want you to come to Washington. And, you know, here I am working as an emergency doctor in North Carolina, and I'm going, you've got to be kidding me with this stuff. And my wife and I couldn't believe it, actually. And to be honest with you, I really thought it was a prevarication. I thought that the CIA director was really trying to pick my brain about what I knew because of my family connections and these experiences we had. In reality, he and the president did not have access to these projects. And that's
it's
when I began to.
Unbelievable, isn't it?
Oh yeah, that's when I began to uncover, you know, how Washington really works or doesn't work. And the secrecy that was going on, and also what was behind the secrecy. And, you know, this is the part of it that most people don't get, is that the reason this information has been so obfuscated and completely confusing to the average person who tries to look into it, is because what they're trying to hide is not only the fact that we're not alone in the universe, which 70% of Americans now accept the fact that there's intelligent life out there. It's because we already know that they're visiting us here, and we figured out their energy and propulsion systems. And if that is disclosed, it's the end of gas and oil and coal and centralized utilities. It's an entirely new civilization. And we're talking about a $600 trillion nest egg of commodities and assets that this cabal, for lack of a better word, are trying to protect. And the public are very naive about how power is run. They really think, that, oh, well, you're the president, or you're the CIA director, or you're the Senate Intelligence Committee chairman. I have personally briefed all these people, and they don't know anything about this stuff. I mean, they ask about it, they're lied to about it, and that's why they end up coming to me, and I put these big briefings together like I did for President Obama after he got elected. And I think that what people have to understand is that basically what Eisenhower said when he said, beware the military-industrial complex, because it's going to become a threat to our security and our way of life, this is what he was talking about. He was talking about
definitely
shadowy, classified projects that would just get out of control. So Project Starlight, which was the code name for these early briefings I did for the CIA director and folks like that, morphed eventually into Disclosure Project, which became the worldwide movement to end secrecy on this subject. And now, you know, we see the French government releasing 100,000 pages of their space agency secret documents. The Ministry of Defense in England has released thousands of pages. Recently, we had Denmark and Chile and New Zealand in the last couple months release their secret files. So, you know, it launched this worldwide juggernaut, and we did a national press club event in 2001 that at the time was the most watched event in the history of the National Press Club, and eventually about a billion people saw it, billion people. And it really launched this worldwide, but the United States has been the hard nut to crack because this is where the military-industrial complex is most powerful and most centered, and also where all these technologies are at their sort of apex of development, albeit within classified programs. So as a result of that, we then a couple years ago formed the OrionProject.org. That is a organization looking to develop the ability to bring out these energy and propulsion systems, which is at the heart of the secrecy, so that we could get off of the current energy system that's not only impoverishing 40% of the world's population, but also destroying the environment and making people so sick. So in a sense, you know, as a medical doctor, one of the ways I look at this is that, well, I've given up taking care of shootings and stabbings and car wrecks and heart attacks and all that fun stuff. My patient now is sort of Gaia, the Earth, and her 7 billion children, and I really look at it that it's a matter of a calling to help heal the Earth from this the metastatic, cancerous growth of secrecy and secret power, which is keeping all these wondrous life-saving technology secret. So that's it in sort of a nutshell.
Last week I interviewed Jill Mero, who wrote a book, Keys to Soul Evolution, which is a channeled piece from the seventh dimension, looking at us and letting us know what's going to be happening as we go through this ascension process, which is probably why right now, you know, we have all this attention on us, this extraterrestrial attention. But and then, you know, I have that experience where I read a book like that and understand that there are higher dimensional beings that are even without bodies, you know, just balls of light maybe in the seventh dimension that are looking out for us. And then I go and read a book called Alien Mind, and it talks about aliens that live 11,000 years to 11 million years that may not be, you know, may not have our best interest in mind.
Well, that's all nonsense. I mean, you know, I think the whole idea of that is just sort of New Age claptrap. I mean, the idea that there are civilizations capable of reaching here who are hostile to us is, and if you know anything about the physics of interstellar travel, is laughable, because if they were hostile, it would have been all over in 1945 when we detonated the first nuclear weapon. So I think there's no basis for that at all. Now, you know, people can, I mean, look, you know, paper doesn't refuse ink, and you can write and say anything. But, you know, having been all over the world, I have never seen any evidence whatsoever that any of these civilizations are hostile towards us, although it's sort of a New Age, you know, article of faith. And basically, I think that's part of the disinformation. They really want us to have something else new to fear. They want to replace the Cold War and global terrorism with a threat from outer space, and this is what the military-industrial complex and most of the New Age and UFO community has bought that hook, line, and sinker. In fact, they're the worst purveyors of the worst disinformation, ironically, are amongst the people who would aver that they're the most enlightened. And what I'm finding is that that entire agenda has been seeded by the intelligence community. It's very interesting because I've interviewed many people, more than a couple of dozen folks who worked in the intelligence community, who have developed the means for doing what the public call abductions and mutilations. And everyone thinks it's an ET phenomenon. I said, no, it's not at all. It's all man-made, and it's hoaxing. It's sort of a cosmic 9/11. And people have no idea what the capabilities are to deceive people on these sort of issues. And you'd have to ask the question, why would they want to do it? Well, for the first thing, they want to scare people. They control people through fear. But ultimately, as Wernher von Braun, who invented the rocket for Adolf Hitler, said on his deathbed to one of our disclosure witnesses, top secret witnesses, he said to Carol Rosen that this had been planned since the 50s to eventually convince the people that there was a threat from outer space, an alien threat, so that we could unite the world around a military junta and go into space weaponized, and that would enable them to get even more money and power out of the people of the world. So I'm extremely skeptical about 90% of the information that's out there on the subject. I see that most of it is some kind of carefully orchestrated disinformation to create a sort of a Manichaean us versus them dynamic that can continue, and that's the opposite of the trajectory we're supposed to be on. I think the trajectory we're supposed to be on is a peaceful civilization on Earth that is universally at peace in the cosmos. And I think that these other sort of what you see in the movies, what's coming out of Hollywood this year, for example, with all these sort of alien invasion and battle scenarios, this is all orchestrated by the intelligence community. In fact, I've worked with some of the top people in Hollywood, and they've told me that these things are actually directed out of people within the CIA. I have a document, by the way, from 1953, where the CIA said, you know, we really can use this for psychological warfare value, and that they were talking about engaging Disney Studios to make cartoons or cartoonish things about flying saucers and little green men so that people would not take the issue seriously. In modern times, they've gone from movies like Close Encounters of the Third Kind and E.T. to Independence Day, where the whole world is united to sort of fight aliens. And this is exactly the kind of jingoistic claptrap that you would expect from the war profiteers, who, of course, you know, it's a multi-trillion-dollar business. So, unfortunately, on this subject, I would say that at least 90% of everything you will read and hear on it is some type of disinformation that's been embedded into society.
So, Alien Mind was supposed to have been written by an investigative journalist who spent time with, you know, with the...
Well, I really don't, you know, I don't know the person who wrote it, so I can't comment on that.
So it's just an interesting analysis, and if it's totally a disinformation piece, it's certainly very...
Well, normally these things have part information and part disinformation, and this is the way that you would couch it. For example, people have had ET contact, and some of the aspects of that contact can then be mirrored through these hoaxed abduction scenarios. So, you know, you don't really know, is it real gold or fool's gold? Is it real or is it Memorex, as the commercial used to say? And I think that this is exactly the kind of obfuscation you expect from the intelligence community. And remember, I mean, Rumsfeld, you know, around 9/11 said, look, there's $2 trillion missing out of the Department of Defense budget. Well, where has it gone? It's gone into these areas. And with trillions of dollars, you can do a lot of mischief. And you know, and we're not talking about the stuff that's the overt funding of things like Iraq and Afghanistan and Vietnam or what have you, or the Cold War. These are the black projects that are off budget and not supervised by the president or the Congress. And I think that what people have to understand is that, you know, a couple hundred billion a year from our treasury is going into this kind of stuff, and they can do a lot of very clever disinformation with a couple hundred billion a year.
Yeah, they can. Well, one of the things that they talked about in Alien Mind was electrogravity, which I believe is something similar to what I've read in your material in terms of a new form of sort of what Tom Bearden is talking about as well.
Sure.
But it's something that don't want to have public, and they discourage anybody who's trying to develop it. But this is, you know, these technologies are the basis of a lot of the, evidently a lot of the, you know, the way the spacecraft move, as well as, you know, getting huge amounts of energy to do other things that need to be done. So I assume the technologies they're talking about are similar to what you found as you've done your research.
Well, you know, again, since I haven't read that particular thing, I'd not want to comment whether that's accurate or not. I can tell you what we know, since, I mean, our team is the world expert on this. I mean, there's no need to refer to other people. I mean, Tom Bearden and other people like him, but more importantly, the people who, I mean, in fact, one of the top 14 scientists in the Department of Defense who's actually built and worked on these systems is on our team. I've worked with people who are for 30 years have worked in these classified projects building these anti-gravity devices. So it doesn't have to be second, third hand sort of speculation. These are the people that the Orionproject.org have put together. And in fact, what right. we're calling for is a kind of a peaceful Manhattan project that we, the people, fund, where we can build a laboratory here near the University of Virginia, where we live, and put a dozen or so of these geniuses together and build up these systems independent from the government, independent from Lockheed and Northrop and these other large corporations. Like my uncle's old company was Northrop Grumman. And I think that what we need to do is do this in a way that is free from the corruption that goes along with the strings that go into government and large corporate operations that tie into the military and the intelligence community, because those always just become a boondoggle and end up being classified and means they're secret. So over the last 20 years, we have identified scientists who've actually worked on and built these things. And more importantly, in the last year, we've acquired a computer disk that has thousands of documents, each of which have hundreds of pages of classified and seized patents and designs for these kind of energy devices. So we not only have the intelligence and the information, we have the people who worked in these areas who want to work with us. What we have to now do is figure out how to get the funding in place to do this in a secure, safe way and bring it out. Because obviously there are a lot of powerful interests who are not happy with what we're working on. And, you know, they don't like the fact that I'm exposing the hoaxed abductions, and they don't like the fact that I've exposed at the level that we have in briefings I've done for the president and other people that there's this sort of a cosmic 9/11, a sort of a cosmic Gulf of Tonkin that's being planned. And they don't like the fact that we have identified the people and the means and the designs to bring out these technologies, which would, let's face it, make oil and gas and coal completely unnecessary. And I think that, you know, this is a struggle for the future of our people and for the planet. And it should have happened, you know, if you talk to people like Dr. Bearden and others, you know, the technologies have been around since the late 1800s and early 1900s using very high voltage electromagnetic fields that result in the tapping of this free energy field that's around us in the fabric of space-time. Right. But also in terms of propulsion for anti-gravity, these things began to be looked at in the early part of the 20th century. So we're 100 years retarded as a civilization, not only in terms of these energy and propulsion systems, but in terms of medical techniques and healing, because there are applications in medicine that are astonishing when you start getting into this sort of transdimensional physics. So we're very concerned about all of these issues, although even though I'm a medical doctor, I tell people the secrecy around this area of physics is the same whether you're dealing with regrowing a limb or that's been severed or bringing out something that would run your house and car without any pollution. But the most critical emergency facing the planet, in my opinion, is the geopolitical crisis and the environmental crisis that could threaten all life on Earth. So in terms of my thinking as an emergency doctor and triaging this, that has to be the top priority, which is why I've left medicine to work on this full time. And I think that it's really critical that people understand that it's not just describing the problem, but hey, we actually have the solutions, but we have to come together and bring them out. You know, it's like Ben Rich at Lockheed Skunk Works before he died said, look, he said three things to a group of people that on my team. One is that they've already developed the technologies to go faster than the speed of light. In fact, he said, the head of Lockheed Skunk Works, their secret operations at Lockheed, said, we can take E.T. home. He also said there are no private conversations anywhere on Earth. And he also said that anything you can imagine, we've already done at the Skunk Works. Yeah. I mean, things that sound like Star Trek. So the problem is, he followed that on and said, these things are locked in a black project in a box, as it were, the vault, we call it. And it would take an act of God to get them out to benefit humanity, to which I said, well, then we have to be that act of God. We have to be that act of conscious and enlightened movement to bring these things out to benefit the planet in a way that they can be applied for peaceful purposes.
Well, how do you see this playing out? I mean, do you think that we will eventually get the funding to do kind of this new Manhattan Project and, you know, go as parallel to the secret programs, or do you think that eventually the secret programs will implode from within and there'll be enough whistleblowers coming out of those that overcome fear? Because basically, the way I understand it from what's in your book, you know, when Goldwater asked to find out what's in Area 51, Curtis LeMay, who I actually took care of when I was a surgeon in the military, so I know him personally, basically told him not to ask again or he'd shoot him or whatever he said. I mean, there's an awful lot of fear around these.
Well, there is, and that's why I don't think it's an either-or thing. I think the process of disclosure, and we started out when we did the Disclosure Project National Press Club event, which, by the way, can be seen online at disclosureproject.org. It's there for anyone to look at. We also have a 4-hour DVD and a 2-hour DVD of all these witnesses speaking. But at that time, we had 110 of these top secret guys from the intelligence community and military. Now I have over 550 of them. And
they're coming out from within.
They're coming out from within. The problem is that the really hard nut to crack, in the sense, when we started this effort, only about a third of the public thought that ETs were real and that there was life out there. Now it's over two-thirds. We've won that war. The problem is that we're still, I mean, everyone thinks we're so high-tech with fiber optics and computers and stuff, but those are being run off a coal-fired power plant, okay, which is from the 1800s. The basic operating system, the OS, of our planet is locked in an 1800s paradigm. And even a nuclear power plant is nothing but a steam boiler turbine, because you're getting heat from the splitting of an atom. Most people don't realize that. The nuclear power isn't directly creating electricity. It's just creating heat that then turns a steam turbine, just like the 1800s, the choo-choo trains going across the continent to
Plus
California.
Plus it causes a lot of problems with waste. So.
Yeah, and then you've got, you know, thousands of years of deadly radioactive waste and sort of pre-positioned weapons of mass destruction at every power plant in America that's nuclear. So these are all really primitive ways of getting energy. These very high voltage resonant frequency systems that have not only healing qualities, but also can tap into what's called zero point energy or the quantum vacuum. It's estimated that every cubic centimeter of space, everyone listening, look at the room around you, every cubic centimeter of space in that room has enough energy to run the entire Earth's energy needs for a day. So it's an enormous amount of power. And the problem is, once you create the electromagnetic devices that tap into this energy that's in the fabric of space-time, you don't have the need for a power bill or a gas bill. And that's what's wonderful in terms of how it would liberate the people and cause a huge amount of prosperity and abundance. We could eliminate poverty on this planet in a generation and could completely rehabilitate the Earth's environment and oceans, because the pollution would end.
Food becomes very inexpensive, too.
Not only food, manufacturing, distribution, everything, and, you know, recycling. A lot of people don't realize that the reason we can't recycle any more than we do is because the amount of energy it takes to recycle, and the energy is coming from fossil fuels, creates so much pollution that you get to the point of diminishing return. When the energy is free and from a clean source, this changes that equation fundamentally. So this is what we're talking about being able to do. And so I think that we need to say, look, whether or not these things ever get released from classified projects is a question that we're working on. I'm working on it all the time. But it's sort of like when I lived in the Middle East, there was a saying, trust in God, but tie your camel. And really what you want to be able to do is say, that may happen, but we, the people, need to come together. And, I mean, the grant proposal we have for the OrionProject.org is only $5.7 million. I mean, this is less than what we spent in my little rural county to build a new cat and dog shelter recently. So, I mean, basically that's what we're looking for. So we have to find a way of finding people who can provide that level of funding, seed funding, so we can put these scientists together and build out at least a generation 1.0 version of these devices. I'm very skeptical that they're just going to come to us out of somebody's garage, because the physics and the specialized equipment you need to do these very high voltage resonant frequency systems are non-trivial. I mean, just the equipment list to outfit this lab is $400,000 or $500,000, which you have to have specialized equipment. You know, most of the stuff we use is 110 and 220 voltage, and we're talking about voltage in the tens of thousands to millions of volts, but in very low amounts of current. So your wattage is very small that goes in, and it opens up sort of a vector into this energy field in space around us, and you end up getting 10, 20, 100 times more energy out. And this has been proven to be possible, and yet you wonder why we don't have them out running our homes and cars. Well, it's because the people who have tried to bring it out hit this buzzsaw. You know, the American Federation of Scientists, a very mainstream scientific organization, came out a few months ago, and this document's on the OrionProject.org website, where they talk about that there are over 5,100 patents that have been seized by the National Security Act. And some of these are so ridiculous, like back in 1971, they found that one of the patents seized was just an efficient solar cell that would have been competitive with coal and gas, and they seized it. Now, what national security threat could that have been, except that it would have been competitive with oil and gas? And the people who are abusing the national security state power seized it and made it secret. Now, this is not me saying this. This is the American Federation of Scientists and their report saying this. So this is not a conspiracy theory. This is a fact. It's a conspiracy, but it's a conspiracy fact. And so what people have to understand is that the reason all of you are still pumping gas into your gas tanks and paying for an electric bill is because there is a transnational cabal of what I call masters of the universe, these MOTUs, as I call them for abbreviation, who basically are calling the shots, not the president and not your congressman and not your senator. And I think that this is not only a threat to our freedom, as Eisenhower warned it would be, but it's a threat. It's now become an existential threat. And then you add to that that this same group of people have decided to misinform the public or disinform the public and have put weapons in space that are targeting extraterrestrial vehicles as they approach the Earth. This is also something that we can prove has happened. And what that means is that this is an existential security threat, not just to the United States, but to the entire world, because you have a bunch of madmen who have no checks and balances on them, basically trying to pick a fight with what are clearly peaceful interstellar civilizations.
Right.
Because, look, if you have the ability to travel from the Andromeda Galaxy or someplace to here at multiples of the speed of light, and you've had that ability, and I think these civilizations have been around for thousands, if not millions, of years around the Earth. If they were hostile, they could turn this Earth into just a pink mist floating through space and nothing on it.
Right, yeah.
There's no question about that. And you know, this sort of fantasy, this sort of fundamentalist Christian Scientological eschatological end of the world Armageddon fantasy of a big battle in space with the aliens is just been concocted by people who want to control people through fear and extract more trillions of dollars out of the world economy for their war profiteering. There's no basis, in fact, at all for it. And what that means is that we have to, you know, stop listening to that kind of jingoistic nonsense, this sort of, you know, disinformation. And that's why what we're doing with the CE5 initiative, which is our attempt, not attempt, but it's now become a successful program where we've trained thousands of people to go out under the stars and using advanced concepts and consciousness, and we use also lasers, and we have electromagnetic signals that we send out in space that are tones that have been recorded from extraterrestrial vehicles. And we create a vector, sort of like you vector a jet into Hartsfield Airport in Atlanta or JFK, and we have had the most amazing contact that has escalated in the last 2 years or so. In fact, this new book that's called Contact Countdown the Transformation comes with a DVD with the book, and it's at disclosureproject.org that describes, and the images show the kind of contact we've had. It's really amazing. And these are people, you know, who are just, you know, housewives and engineers and doctors and lawyers or whoever, just the general public, who've learned how to do these techniques, and the ETs are very eager to answer. And what that says to me is that the government has either denied the existence of this or not knowing what to do with it, or these classified projects have militarized the relationship. And what these extraterrestrial civilizations are waiting for is for a group of humans to organize in some kind of forward-looking, enlightened way to make open contact. And that's what CSETI.org is doing, CSETI.org is doing. And, in fact, we're going to be, those of people, I guess, listening to this, should know that we're going to be doing this in Colorado in the Mysterious Valley near Crestone in June, 26th to July 2nd. And then we're also going to be taking a group over to England into the crop circles and doing contact there in July, from July 24th to 31st. And then later in the year at Mount Shasta in August and early September, and then at Joshua Tree National Park in October, end of October and early November of this year. So we do these four or five times a year where we train groups of people. And they have then gone back to Montreal or South Africa or France or wherever and practice, and they have the most, and these people are beginning to have amazing contact happen that's being documented. So I think it's a movement amongst the people of the world to say, look, Hillary Clinton and the UN Secretary General may be dragging their feet on this, but we don't need to drag our feet. We can do it. Mm-hmm.
Do you believe that extraterrestrials have addressed the UN now, or will do so in the future? Do you think they already have?
Oh no, there's been no such thing. I mean, how would they? I mean, if they approached the New York City in one of these vehicles, they'd be blown out of the sky.
I mean, privately. It hasn't been announced.
No, because I have provided briefings to people at the level of the Secretary General and senior top-tier people, and they don't have the first clue of what's going on. And it's clear, you know, whether there's a compartmented secret operation within, you know, the UN that interfaces with their colleagues in other areas, it's possible. But in terms of anything open like that that's acknowledged by people who are there legitimately, no. I have to point out that there's a big difference between an institution's main function. For example, the United States government, people say, oh, the United States government's keeping things secret. I said, look, most people in the United States government couldn't find their ass in a well-lighted room with both hands. And I hate to say it. I mean, they really have no idea, no clue on this subject. But there are compartmentalized projects. So there could be such a project at the UN, mm-hmm. but the people who are actually running that organization wouldn't know about it. And you find the same thing is true in Great Britain. When I, some years ago, briefed the former Minister of Defense there, Lord Hill Norton, who was a five-star admiral, he told me that he had been head of the Ministry of Defense, which also means head of MI5 and MI6, which is their CIA, and also had been at one point the head of the Military Committee for NATO. And Lord Hill Norton, I'm sitting at his house in Hampshire, and he says, look, I didn't know about this subject until I left that office. How could this be going on? I said, well, you're in the same boat that the CIA director and these other people. There is a sort of shadow government doing this stuff, and they didn't want you to know. And he was furious. He said, well, why wouldn't they want me to know? I said, well,
yeah.
You're and I said, well, you're a stand-up guy. I said, would you have stood for the fact that there was an illegal operation stealing trillions of dollars from the world economy, keeping this stuff secret, creating the pretext for various endless wars, and who have engaged in murder and mayhem and assassinations to maintain this secrecy? This I know for a fact.
Right.
He said, I wouldn't have stood for that for a moment. And I said,
and
sir, that I said, now you've answered your question. This is why they wouldn't
right.
tell you, because the first thing they do is what I call a soul biopsy, where they do a psychological
right.
assessment to see if any given president or any given Senate, the Intelligence Committee chairman, will go along with this agenda. If they won't, or
right.
if they think they won't, they're not going to tell them anything. And so, you know, people like the Honorable Paul Hellyer, who I'm working with very closely, who's the former Minister of Defense of Canada, a G7 country and one of our closest allies, he told me the same thing that Minister of Defense Lord Hill Norton in Great Britain told me. He never was briefed on this matter, even though he was head of the Ministry of Defense of Canada, one of the top economic powers in the world. So this is how it works. So, and yet, I do know that there are compartmented secret operations within the Canadian intelligence and military service dealing with this issue. So it's not as simple as people think. A lot of people have this sweeping idea of a conspiracy that, you know, the government is keeping this secret. And I said, well, most people in the government have no idea about these things.
Right,
but they know probably less than what someone who's seen one of my videos on the History Channel. So.
Yeah, and if people want to understand this concept we've been talking about more in depth, I recommend they watch this interview with the witness, William, how do you pronounce his last name?
Palak.
Because he addresses that specifically in Dr. Greer's interview with him regarding how these people show up, know everything about everything, and yet don't exist when you go to investigate who they are. So they obviously can travel in any circle and gather information, and yet there is really no accountability because they, when they investigate, these people don't exist. It's really interesting. High level, well, they show up at high level meetings and
they have an all access pass, as we say, you know.
All access pass. there's some real direct evidence in that.
Oh, there's no question. You know, it's interesting because there's a book that we put out called Disclosure. And Disclosure is another book that's in many languages around the world. And it has, it's almost 600 pages and has all these top secret documents and the testimony of many of these insiders in the military. All of them are military and intelligence insiders, and their name, rank, and serial number. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people are amazed when they see that we put that out there and have gotten away with it. But when you look at that, you realize that this is a common theme, that the people who are keeping this secret or move in this shadowy world. And in fact, this scientist I'm working with in Washington, who is one of the top 14, quote, national treasures in the Department of Defense scientific community, he has been at meetings where there's a man that shows up. And at one minute, he'll come in an admiral's uniform. The next time he's at a meeting, he's an executive with the MITRE Corporation. The next time that he sees him, he is with the CIA. And everywhere he goes, his biometrics to get into these top secret SCIFs, what are secure communication intelligence facilities, his biometrics work, everything's programmed, and he has a whole full access pass. And this sounds like something out of a movie from the Bourne Identity or something, but this is 100% the way the system really works. And when if a president pushes too hard on this, he gets threatened. You know, Jimmy Carter there in Atlanta, he had a UFO sighting when he was governor, and I have his report for him from Carter. And when he became president, he demanded to know about the UFO matter from current CIA director, who was Papa Bush, Bush Sr. And Bush Sr. basically turned to Carter and said, we're not going to tell you anything. Go get it from the Congressional Research Service, the CRS, if you can. And then Carter launched an investigation and tried to get Stanford Research International to do a study, and some shadowy people came from the Pentagon who had one of these all-access passes and basically threatened the head of SRI and said, look, if you do this study for the White House and for the president, we're going to pull all of our contracts out of SRI and you'll go bankrupt. Mm-hmm. So what happened is that they refused to do this study on behalf of an inquiry from the president of the United States. This we have an affidavit for. Then when Carter kept pushing on it, he eventually had a couple of these guys show up in the residential area of the White House and said, sir, if you would like to complete your first term as president,
exactly,
you're going to keep your mouth shut on this.
On.
And they just flat out threatened him.
Yeah.
So, you know, this is the way the system works. And, you know, people, again, I think are very naive about how power is played. And it's kind of brutish. And and this is why, you know, I tell people the thing that's really missing in our society amongst the very wealthy and the corporate world and the political world is moral courage, what Robert Kennedy called the moral courage, which is more valuable than intelligence even or bravery in battle. And that is to stand up to these sort of issues regardless of the social opprobrium that may attend doing so. And I think that we're in a situation now where we're going to have to come together as a people and do this ourselves, not only disclosure, but the contacts. There's really three main things we're doing. The direct contact with ETs, which anyone can come and be trained to do. And in fact, at DisclosureProject.org, people can get a training program that has all the meditation CDs, the contact protocols, the tapes of the tones that we send out on radio frequencies out in the space, the whole bit. All that's packaged, ready to go. So even if they can't make it to one of these week-long events, they can do that. And then the other thing that people can do is that they can help us find further information and people for Disclosure. You mentioned this Pollack interview, and that's at DisclosureProject.org. This man I interviewed some years ago, but he was scared to come forward, and he said, look, hold this back until I die. And we got a letter this fall from his wife and a death certificate that said, you know, he's passed away, and I know he wants this out, and you can release this now. So now we have released this amazing interview that I did with this top secret
guy.
There's
a lot of deathbed confessions in this business, which is
Oh, yes. Yep. And so that's one. I mean, I had it long before he died. We had to wait, you know, 7 or 8 years because, you know, we got it. We could only release it posthumously. And, you know, one of the things is that when someone asks me to keep a confidence, I fully know how to do that, and so do you as a medical doctor. And but, you know, on this stuff, as some people feel like they and their families would be at risk. So I basically allow someone to sort of drive that requirement. If they're willing to come out now, I say great. If they want to give me documents that I release on their behalf, I have some people at the National Security Agency and CIA where I've gotten documents about all this that I've released, I'll say I'll do it. And if they want to do it posthumously, we can do it that way as well. So, and I think the main thing is that people need to know the truth, and they have a right to know the truth, but they need to know that then there's a follow-on action, and the action is we have to make contact ourselves peacefully, and we have to also come together and figure out how we're going to protect and provide the funding for these engineers and physicists who know how to build these systems and do this in a professional, properly managed way. And our budget for this project, the OrionProject.org, is only a 2-year period, and we think that between 6 months and 18 months, we would have the first generation of these devices out to the public. And believe me, if I got nearly 1 billion people to see the Disclosure Project worldwide, we'd get 3 billion people, 2 to 3 billion people who'd be aware of one of these devices being revealed, because we would go, I mean, there'd be satellite trucks, everything, it'd be real stream, because the technology that exists now that didn't exist 9 or 10 years ago in terms of getting the word out, I mean, look what's happening in Egypt, is just amazing. So, you know, we would go very quickly with this, such a device being released to the public. And once that has happened, it's like the toothpaste being squeezed out of a tube. I mean, once it's squeezed out, you really can't put it back in.
You can't get it back in.
Yeah, and that's kind of how I do it. And people say, well, what if the government comes and tries to seize it? I said, I'll tell them to go straight to hell. I mean, I'm a nice guy until I'm not, and then, you know, I'm an ER doc, how we are. You know, it's like, watch out. And, you know, I'm just not going to, I told someone, I said, they'll have to take me out feet first, and that's it, you know. And I think that's what you
read your book. They should read your book about adventures in that area.
Oh, God, yes. I mean, I've gone through the Valley of Death many times on
that's
this.
Right.
And
you sure have.
And unfortunately have lost some dear friends helping us with this. But
yeah.
I think that, you know, a lot of people have said, you know, are you afraid? I said, if I was the kind of person to be afraid, I'd be very afraid. I'm not that kind of person. And having had a near-death experience and when I was 17, I know there is no death, and I know that if, you know, after the dissolution of the physical body, the body of light and the conscious body continues and continues and continues. So that kind of fear, that sort of animal body condition fear, is something that I can overcome, and I think we all have to. That's what higher consciousness is about, is overcoming that.
And you get a great deal of spiritual protection through your spiritual practices.
Yes, and believe me, they
go hand in hand.
Yeah, and the ETs are protecting.
When you have spiritual hearing, you can tell where to go and where not to go. You know, it's pretty.
We've had extraterrestrial spacecraft come in when there have been jet fighters sent in over one of our sites that have chased them out. we've had. I mean, this stuff is amazing. I mean, if people come out for a week with us, their life will be changed because they will not only learn things about consciousness and how to make contact, they'll see things that they thought you would have to see in a Hollywood movie.
That's right.
And I tell people it's because the ETs are eager. I won't use the word desperate, but they're eager to find humans who are peaceful.
Right.
And enlightened,
the right energy and intent,
and have freed their minds from all this sort of alien abduction, alien mind, superstitious nonsense, and can go out free of fear, make contact, and do so with the purpose of creating universal peace. Because, see, the time that we're entering into, I think we're in an era that started probably 100 years ago or so, where humanity and the Earth is to be in a state of enlightenment and universal peace for at least 500,000 years. And that this is a time, we're at this point of emergence. And the reason there's so much difficulty is because there are these retrograde forces that want to pull us into destruction. But as the last gasp of that old world order is taking their last dying gasp, we have to be aware of that, and it is a dangerous time. But we really have to have our vision focused on that far horizon, which is not very far
future,
now,
yeah.
where we can really live on this planet in a high-tech, zero-emission, abundant, peaceful society that's just. And, you know, you look at, for example, look at Egypt. With everything that's happening there, you have 40% of the public lives on less than $2 a day, while there are kleptocrats, the kleptocracy, that are multi-billionaires with their Swiss bank accounts. This kind of injustice and egregious abuse of power, which happens in our country as well, in America, when we're not, you know, people don't talk about it, but it's actually worse in America than it is in a banana republic. And that is something which is fundamentally wrong. There are, you know, a lot of people don't know this fact. There are 200 or 300 families and corporations that have over half of the net worth of the world that they personally own and control. So, you know, with 7 billion people versus 200 or 300. So this is the kind of thing that is not sustainable. And their attempts to maintain this sort of geopolitical control, centralized control, is literally doing what I've coined a term called planeticide, the deliberate killing of an entire planet. And that's what's happening, where, you know, with malice aforethought, where these technologies and these sciences could have been released decades ago. And here we are looking at both polar ice caps melting, with huge climate change, with oscillations and aberrations. And not only that, but I think the thing that's going to get us before environmental things do is the geopolitical crisis, where you have 2.5 billion Chinese and people in India industrializing at 10% a year, all wanting oil. Well, I got news for people. You know, at a certain point, you're going to have a clash of civilizations. We have got to find a way out of this conundrum.
Right.
And the good news is,
the oil's going to run out.
The good news is we have it. You know, I mean, I tell people this is actually a message of enormous hope and positivity, because not only are we not alone in the universe and they're here to help us and understand what we're doing, but the technologies and the sciences and the consciousness for having a civilization that's abundant and sustainable for hundreds of thousands of years is already here. It's not even have to be invented. We already have it. That's, I think, a message of enormous hope for people.
Right. Well, we're coming to the end of our hour. Would you like to give your contact information one more time?
Sure, yeah. The people who are interested in joining me with these expeditions out under the stars, a list of those is at csei.org, at csei.org. And then the people who want to look into all the top-secret testimony and documents and the briefing I put together for President Obama and other things is at Disclosure Project, all one word, .org. And then the energy research project is theorionproject.org. So those are our three websites.
And your the book I read was Hidden Truth, Forbidden Knowledge, and your other book is?
Well, there are four books. Actually, okay. The most recent one is Contact, Countdown the Transformation. That's the one that has the DVD that shows the images of the contact and the tones and everything. That one and Hidden Truth, Forbidden Knowledge is at disclosureproject.org, as is the book Disclosure that has all the testimony and top secret documents from these military witnesses. And then there's another book, an earlier one called Extraterrestrial Contact, The Evidence and Implications, which has the briefings I put together for Clinton and the CIA director and a description of the contact initiative and some of the early contact we had. So all four of those books are at disclosureproject.org. And we also have a meditation CD where I teach people the Vedic Sanskrit mantra meditation as well as the remote viewing technique for making contact. And there's also a two-hour DVD and a four-hour DVD of the top-secret military and intelligence witnesses speaking. That all that is at disclosureproject.org.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Greer. It's been a fascinating hour.
Thank you.
I've been looking forward to for a long time. I'm glad we were able to get together. If you would like to come back on to discuss your later book, we'd be happy to have you. And this is Dr. Susan Kolb with Temple of Health Radio Show, and we have been interviewing Dr. Stephen Greer on Hidden Truth, Forbidden Knowledge, as well as the Disclosure Project, the Orion Project, and his other aspects of what the next step for humanity needs to be. Thanks a lot, Stephen. I appreciate you joining us.
Thank you.